All right, good afternoon. We're going to go ahead and get Senate Judiciary started for the afternoon. We have two bills that are scheduled to have for public hearing only, and that means this public hearing, Senate Bill 550 and Senate Bill 574. My plan today is whatever testimony we take, we'll do it jointly, meaning both bills, because I assume there may be people who might want to speak on both of those bills instead of separating them out. What we're going to do is this. I'm going to have counsel go through the two bills and give the overview as he would normally do. He will be talking on 1574 regarding some amendments, one that was released today that we finally were able to work out the some of the changes that some of the people wanted. I then will have Senator Burdick come forward on her own to give a statement as to her own bill that she has got forward, Senate Bill 550. I will conclude opening statements with the 1574. I will then make another statement after that, and then we'll decide on where we go from there. So with that, Council, why don't you go ahead and get started?
Chair, members of the committee, you have, in addition to the bill, three other documents in front of you. You have the Dash 2 and Dash 6 amendments. You also have what I pulled off the internet from the state of Washington as it relates to what states that they give reciprocity to. And when you go through this, they give reciprocity to 11 states. Most of the states they do not give reciprocity to are states that do two things. They don't require fingerprints, they don't require training, or they don't do a mental health background check as to see if the person has been civilly committed. What you have before you in the bill is it would allow Oregon to recognize concealed handgun permits from other states. Yeah, basically, if the licensing requirements for the other states are similar to what we have. The Dash 2 amendments, what they do is they say that if you are a person from another state that comes to Oregon, and let's say you, and this is how it's going to happen, Mr. Chairman, as a committee, you drive into Oregon, you get stopped for motor vehicle violation, speeding, headlight, something like tail light, and somehow it becomes, the police officer understands that you're carrying a concealed handgun, okay? And you may even show them that you have a permit. Well, that puts you in violation of Oregon law because we don't recognize permits from other states. What this would do is allow you as an affirmative defense to go to court and show that you have a license from another state and that you meet all the requirements that Oregon has. So, for example, you haven't been convicted of a felony. You haven't been convicted of any misdemeanors in the last 4 years. You haven't been civilly committed. You haven't have, you do not have a stalking order against you. And that you have some, you've been, you know, and that you have some kind of training as it relates to the file. So it's an affirmative defense. The Dash 6 amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, set forth what would be provisions that we would look for in other states to see whether they are similar to ours. Basically the same things that I've already mentioned. The one area where it gets very difficult in an apples-to-apples comparison, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is in the area of misdemeanors. We say all misdemeanors, you can't apply for a license, or you cannot get a license if you've been convicted of a misdemeanor within the last 4 years. Most states are not, they're broader in some ways and not as broad in other ways. Many states do not allow people who've been convicted of a misdemeanor involving violence. Or drug offenses or things like that. What they don't have is they don't have a four-year time limitation on it. So the only way that you could get relief in that state from that particular charge is to have it expunged. So you'd have to go through their court process. What we would do in that, we also have a provision as it relates to juveniles. We say that if you had a juvenile adjudication, and it involved either a felony or a misdemeanor involving domestic violence, you're excluded for 4 years. Well, we also have, you're no longer juvenile when you turn 18, Chair, members of the committee. We require you to be 21 to have a concealed handgun license permit in this state. So it's a very small window there as it relates to when you're not eligible for it. What we say for that is that we would basically give discretion to the state police to look at another state law as it relates to that particular area and see if they are similar. As chair, members of the committee, we do the same thing as it relates to someone who has a violation from a drug offense of possession of marijuana. We give discretion. It varies from state to state. Some states exclude people who are habitual drugs. Regardless of whether they have a conviction. We don't do that, Mr. Chairman. So, as I said, it's particularly down in that area, it's tough to compare apples to apples. And built into this is flexibility from the state police. So when they go through the rulemaking process and the hearing process that would accompany it, they would have flexibility to look at those states and say, okay, they meet a basic public safety test, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
All right, one clarification on the dash six. I think it's explicit that the limitation of what the state police would have discretion was on a narrow three subsections. Everything else that are currently requirements for an Argonian to get a concealed weapons permit in the state would be need to be met. So that would not allow for a lot of discretion on their part, because as we'd heard from some of the individuals that worked through this process, there was some concern as to too much discretion for the state police, and that's what the dash sixes was geared to take care of, except for this one area that was too hard to explicitly state, or you potentially limit a lot of opportunity for people to be able to benefit under this. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's correct.
All right. Senator Burdick, if you'd like to come forward on your own and give a statement as to your own bill, I will take that now.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to bring up with me our superintendent of state instruction, our state
I understand school superintendent. That, but, the chair is not ready to do that. The chair is willing to take your statement now. I will have her come up if she wants to give testimony after I make mine, because I'm going to be opening this up for a joint hearing for the two bills at one time.
She does have time constraints. Will that be happening quickly?
I fully appreciate that. So if you can give me your statement, because I have another statement to make.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Jeannie Burdick. I represent the people of Senate District 18, Southwest Portland and Tigard, and parts of Northwest Portland. Thank you very much for scheduling this hearing on Senate Bill 1550. I very much appreciate it. The purpose of this bill is very simple. It's to make our campuses, our K through 12 schools, and our university campuses truly gun-free. There was a court decision, as you know, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee last year, that overturned the ability of our universities, anyway, to ban all guns from campus. I'm very well aware that the gun issue can be a culture war, and it really doesn't need to be that way, because Senate Bill 1550 is just a common sense bill to allow schools to define for themselves what constitutes a state school. You'll hear people testifying against this who argue that schools are safer if you have a lot of law-abiding citizens carrying around loaded guns. And that is an argument that is made by some. But the schools, if you look at the schools themselves, overwhelmingly, the parents, the students, the teachers, the administrators who actually work in the schools and participate in the schools support Senate Bill 1550 and have for years. And I have testimony here from the Student Senate at the University of Oregon, who passed a resolution to be truly gun-free. And I also have a testimony to turn in from the Oregon Education Association. And you'll be hearing from other educators on this later today. I think it's crucial that schools be able to determine their own destiny. So I have presented, I will present, if you move this bill, an amendment that will actually allow schools to opt out of the requirement that they be truly gun-free, and that they indeed decide to allow people with concealed handgun licenses to be present in their schools. We are a diverse state in Oregon, and the issues often are quite different in some of the rural areas than they are in some of the urban areas. So again, Mr. Chair, I am presenting written testimony, but I won't take up any more of your time today. And again, I wanted to express my appreciation to you for scheduling this hearing. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
All right, thank you very much. Are there any questions from Senator Burdick? All right, I'm going to go ahead and make an opening statement on Senate Bill 1574. From the chair's perspective, this is a bill that I put forward to be a true reciprocity bill for all Oregonians. Senate Bill 1574 would not adversely affect any current or future Oregon CHL holders. 1574 could enhance the ability for Oregon CHL holders to have the right to carry in other states if they're not already recognized in those states, if those states did in fact enter into reciprocity agreements with the state of Oregon. Senate Bill 1574 would permit all out-of-state CHL holders to rely on their licenses to carry within the state of Oregon so long as their state's requirements for issuing that license was similar to Oregon on the issues. My goal was to make certain and to ensure that Oregonians did not become second-class citizens in their own state by allowing individuals that had a lesser or threshold to get a license in another state to be able to come in where our citizens had to meet a certain more rigid requirements. The other portion of that was going to be that the other states would have to give Oregon CHL holders reciprocity based on their Oregon license. That was what the intent of Senate Bill 1574, along with the Dash 2s, would give the affirmative defense to allow an individual who may be cited or charged and have had the actual ability to prove that they were in compliance with Oregon law to be able to defend themselves in a court of law in the state of Oregon for that type of a charge. And the Dash 6s was going to give explicitly the requirements that needed to be met. Now, with that said, let me state the following. About 11:25 this morning, I received word as to the actions that were taking in the House Judiciary Committee. There was discussions between myself and the two co-chairs as to how to move bills forward to have an opportunity for those bills to move forward and potentially ours to move forward the other way. That did not happen. Accordingly, there will not be any gun legislation moving through this committee today or in the future during this legislative session. But I wanted to make that on the record while everyone's here because there was no way that I could actually get word out to many people who traveled here who wanted to give testimony. Realize that what I just said is that both Senate Bill 1550 as well as 1574 will not be moving forward during this session. I am more than willing to sit here and listen to testimony if individuals would like to put on the record their opposition or their support, because I know many people have made the effort to be here today. But I'm not going to, put out a perspective that you think that something's moving forward when the chair has made a decision. We will not have any gun legislation during the 2012 session. Accordingly, if anyone who signed up or hasn't signed up who wants to give testimony on these issues, I am more than willing to take that testimony at this time. Superintendent, I know that your time is valuable and you have other duties that you need to do. I apologize for taking the time to make that and put that on the record, but I wanted to give everyone the opportunity to hear it from me as a chair, because I only got that information, like I said, at 11:25 this morning. Accordingly, Susan, if you'd like to come up and give a statement, I'd be more than glad to take that. And for those who are coming in, what I'm going to go ahead and do, for those who want to give public testimony, I am opening up a public testimony for Senate Bill 1550 as well as 1574. What our goal today will be to take whatever statements you want to make. Realize again that we're not moving any bills. They're not going to. They will be taken off for work session that are currently scheduled for Monday the 13th. They will be removed by the end of today. But if you do want to hear, we'll take as much testimony as we can. We will need to conclude our testimony for today at promptly at 2:45 if we don't complete it before then. And if necessary, we'll use a timer to try to ensure that everyone who wants to be giving testimony still has that opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Susan Castillo, the State Superintendent of Public Instruction for the State of Oregon. And I appreciate your statement about what the fate of these bills, and I can sense in your voice a frustration, because I know you are trying to provide some strong leadership in helping us pass good legislation that keeps everybody safe in our state. So I have written testimony. I am not going to go through that. I just wanted to be here to say that I think most people think that we already have a ban about keeping guns and concealed weapons out of our school, and they're surprised when they hear that we don't. And we know that in the private sector, we have places like the Rose Garden where the Trailblazers play. We have Wells Fargo that in their work sites ban concealed weapons. We know you can't take one into a courthouse. And I just think that it's time for our state to give that same level of protection to the children in our schoolhouses. And so I'll just leave you with that. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Thank you. And unless Committee members have questions. I'm going to go ahead and just go through the testimony. If you do have a question, please acknowledge, let me know that you have a question. All right, so what we're going to do is we're going to try to float between those who have signed up for or against. I have, let's see, I'm going to call up a panel of three. George Pitts, Teresa, I believe it's Ringford, and Greg, is it Terhune? Who would ever like to go first, please?
I'm George Pitts. I'm the director. I'm actually the chairman of the Oregon Association of Shooting Ranges. This consists of the 25 largest ranges in the state of Oregon and 13 to 14,000 members. This particular bill is just hard to kill. This is like hitting the groundhog, okay? Just keeps coming back, and we have one senator keeps bringing it back, and it makes no sense. The arguments are just as bad today as they were several years ago. There's no demonstrated risk to children in this state because a concealed carry holder, in fact, steps on school property or close to school property. And I find it just incredulous that we think that a school principal, a teacher, or administrator can effectively tell me what my rights are or what they are not. And there are reasons for people to be in a public school to pick up their children or whatever else. And I don't see it anywhere comparable to going to the Rose Garden or whatever. Now, we typically hear arguments, well, geez, if it saves the life of one child. Well, if it saves the life of one child, let's not let them ride bicycles. You know, this is absurd. We don't have a demonstrated need here, and I think we should stop addressing the same question year after year. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Chair, Senator Prozanski and committee. My name is Teresa Rayford. I'm from the city of Portland, and I believe that I do support this bill 1550 because I have public safety is a big issue in the city that I live in, and there have been a number of schools affected by guns being involved at the schools. We don't know where the children are getting those guns. We don't know if CHLs are providing the guns to the children or if they're getting them by some other means, but we do know that they're being used at the schools. There's been several shootings where death has occurred to children outside of football games as well as on school grounds, and I hope that this bill passes because if we can eliminate the access at the schools, I think that we can eliminate more death. There has been death because of this.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Quickly on...
I need to have you state your name for the...
My name is Greg Terhune.
Thank you.
From Salem. Quickly on Senate Bill 1574, I appreciate the chairman's effort at working toward reciprocity with other states. I don't know that I would have agreed with putting this in the lap of the Oregon State Police. They have said in the past that they don't want this burden put on them to decide where reciprocity should be, that it should reside more in the Justice Department of the state. So that's where I would like to see a future bill of this type go, where it's actually dealing with the legal system itself, and that they do the determination on reciprocity and don't put this on the Oregon State Police to do this. In 1550, I respect the testimony of the person next to me. However, I did not hear anything at all that reflected on what 1550 does. I sent an email to all of the members of this committee just in this past week, and I will read one paragraph of that email because I do think that this is important. As an NRA certified firearm and personal protection instructor, I can assert that these two bills, and this refers to 1550 and 1551, which is not being heard, create a legal minefield for law-abiding private citizens who wish to carry a legally concealed firearm during the exercise of their daily routines. The fallout, if these bills were to become law, and it would just be a matter of time, is that an otherwise law-abiding woman or man with no prior criminal history will be charged and convicted of a Class C felony with its resultant fines, jail time, and public stigma, all due to forgetting to leave their otherwise legally carried firearm at home while running errands that could very well include a visit to a DMV office or drop off a child in a parking lot of a public school. At the very least, passage of these bills will cause CHL holders not to carry a firearm out of fear that they may inadvertently enter a forbidden location sometime during the day. While this may be a desired outcome of proponents of these bills, it defeats the very reason law-abiding citizens desire to carry a legally concealed firearm as protection against a criminal encounter while away from the house. There is no demonstrated need for this amendment. We've had what I consider an acceptable concealed handgun licensing law on the books now for a couple decades, and we have not seen a problem in this area. It should be the duty of the legislature to address problems, not to anticipate problems in this way. My biggest thing for seeing why this bill is being entertained now at this time is indeed because of the court action that was the decision that was made last year, which struck down invalid, what the court said were invalid rules, administrative rules, by these public institutions. These weren't valid rules to begin with. They should have never been instituted because they contradicted state law. And we like the law the way it is right now. There's been no harm done with this. And there's a whole lot more concealed handgun license holders today than there were a year ago, years before that. And we're not seeing a problem. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for coming forward today. Our next panel, I believe it's Dennis, is it Toon? And then I'm going to go ahead and call up David Reese and Phil Zerzan. You go ahead and get started. I'm going to go ahead and call this one name out one more time. I have a Dennis, and I believe it's Toon, the way it appears to be spelled, Portland Public Schools. Bill, when you're ready.
Well, Chair Przanski, if I may start, Bill and I were going to go together.
All right, David, go ahead.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today in support of Senate Bill 1550 and for the opportunity to be here in Salem on PSU Day at the Capitol. My name is David Reese. I'm the General Counsel at PSU, and with me is Phil Zerzan, our Director of Campus Public Safety. We'll be brief. We understand the statement you started with. We submitted written testimony and won't bother to read it. But we are here today to tell you that we support efforts to keep guns off our campus. We strongly believe that the application of the concealed carry law and the potential proliferation of guns on campus to be detrimental to campus safety and not in the best interests of our faculty, students, staff, and members of the community. It's a position that we share with most other colleges and universities across the country and with the International Association of College Law Enforcement Administrators, which took a strong position in 2008, a very pro-law enforcement position, against the applicability of concealed carry laws on campus. Our really primary purpose today is to tell you why we think college and university campuses are different from other places in our state, and why those differences lead to the conclusion that the concealed carry law should not apply on campus. PSU, like other campuses across the country, has a large number of students who live, eat, study, and play in very dense living and working very dense living and working environment. College life brings with it many challenges. I think we all know what those are. Alcohol and drug, experimentation and abuse, stressful new experiences, new living arrangements, relationship crises, occasional and frankly too frequent mental health crises, and the very real and heightened risk of suicidal thoughts and acts. Our students, like other college students across the country, engage in high-risk behavior, such as binge drinking, at a rate that is greater than that of the general population. Combining those unique elements of campus life with readily available firearms could, in our opinion, have real unintended and potentially deadly consequences on campus. So it's factors such as those and the need to recruit students locally and internationally to a campus that they and their families believe to be safe that leads us to the conclusion that readily available firearms on campus is not in the best interest of our students, our community, or our institution. So with that, I can introduce Phil Zerzan. Phil is our Director of Campus Public Safety. I think he's uniquely qualified to talk about these issues because he's also a former Oregon State Police Lieutenant and spent 8 years as the officer in charge of the OSP office down at Oregon State.
Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee, good afternoon. During my career in law enforcement, I've witnessed the finality that the presence of firearms often brings to events and interactions. This finality is present in issues such as interpersonal violence, suicidal actions, and firearms accidents. This finality has untold costs both in terms of loss of human life, human potential, and grief. As an experienced campus law enforcement officer, I support legislation such as Senate Bill 1550 because of my deep concern that permitting the concealed carry of firearms on campus has a potential to increase the occurrence and severity of violence on the university campus that I'm charged with protecting, and sometimes contribute to the finality of what otherwise might be fleeting thoughts or brief interactions. The addition of firearms raises the stakes, and a shot fired in anger, desperation, or by mistake can create irreparable harm. There are no apologies, therapy, or do-overs that can repair the damage caused by a gunshot wound. Universities are, by design, places of learning and growing. The 18-year-old child we send away to college develops and grows into the graduate ready to take their place in society and the workforce. This journey is not without challenges. These challenges include alcohol, mental health issues, and relationship violence. All of these challenges become additionally difficult with the addition of firearms. I also have concerns with the notion that in some way, responsible citizens carrying concealed firearms can contribute to the overall safety of the campus. I am familiar with the arguments, but as a former police officer, I have concerns that police officers responding to a situation involving an active shooter may not be able to distinguish between the shooter and others with firearms. Police are extensively trained to deal with active shooter situations, whereas students, faculty, staff members, and other members of the public are not. And they also are not integrated into campus safety security plans. Permitting concealed handguns on campus has a very real possibility of deteriorating rather than improving the safety of our campuses. For these reasons, Portland State University supports Senate Bill 1550 and other efforts to keep our campuses safe. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right, our next panel is going to include Joseph Agnes Bovin, Rachel Lucas, and I believe it's Eileen Smith. Rachel, if you want to go ahead and get started.
Okay. Chair Brzezinski and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, my name is Rachel Lucas, and I'm speaking in opposition to SB 1550, the ban that would on CHL holders from legally carrying their weapons in public schools, including college campuses. And I have to say that once again, as I'm listening here, I see the ignorance that says, well, there's so much gun violence at schools because kids are carrying guns in schools. Does anyone get why this is not going to fix that? Yeah, just as a point in case. The other thing is that, again, we don't want to have guns in schools because of all these things, and yet, as the law exists right now, we have all of those same laws in place right now, and we're not seeing any of that, none of it at all. What we have seen, though, is the case of Jeffrey Maxwell at Western Oregon University, where our daughters went, and that person's life, because he was legally carrying a concealed handgun, was disrupted, he was expelled, and his life was changed because of the administrative rules that were wrongly enforced upon him when he was legally carrying. So I think we have a little bit mixed up thinking here. And I think for today I won't go into too much more testimony, but I do want to, because we're not going to be pushing these through. So you know what? I actually do want to say one more thing. I do have a daughter who's a school teacher in Salem, and I do worry about her not being able to, being vulnerable when she's there alone at after school hours, because there have been gang shootings in front of the school when there were teachers inside on a Saturday. And I worry about her. There was a stalker that she had that made it all the way in, using the school rules that they now have. A stalker made it all the way into her classroom. Now, fortunately, he didn't harm her, but what if I worry about my daughter being completely defenseless, and the school policies don't help, and there's no armed guard like there is here protecting them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Eileen Smith. I'm from Salem. Thank you for giving us the opportunity, even though you're not going to push them through. First, on 1574, the one thing that I want to point out, a couple things. The FBI's National Index.
Inlets?
NICS is the group that most states utilize in their purchase of handguns and their concealed weapons permits. It is the, I can get that for you. I don't want to waste your time right now. They use three different databases, two of which are for mental health issues. One of the states that doesn't, for example, one of the states that doesn't have mental health as a review for its concealed carry does use NICS, which also that same state reports its mental health. So if the state would be a lot simpler off if it would just change to that database and would not have to go through all the different little itty-bitty things that you're doing. The second thing is that any state that is a reciprocal state, for example, if someone from Oregon went to California, they have to abide by California rules. If somebody comes from Florida, has to abide by Oregon County state rules. You have to abide by the state rules of where you're at, not where you received. So what happens in Oregon, no matter where you're from, stays in Oregon. Okay? So you don't have to worry so much about who does what wherever. The other thing, I do have testimony for 1550. One of the things that I'm seeing a lot of is hyperbole. I'm seeing some people might say that we need more concealed carry in schools that'd be safer. No one is saying this. They put words into other opposition's mouth. I do not feel that is responsible testimony. It is simply hyperbole. Unless they want to give a source of someone saying this, it's something like, someone on your candidate panel is saying that you are actually this. Well, give me the source of who said that. They can't, because they made it up.
Eileen, I need you to focus on the bill itself, not how people give testimony, please.
Okay. Some of the things that were brought up last time, concealed carry licensees have committed homicides, etc., violent acts. I looked at their source.
Eileen,
of the 31, only.
If you're talking about something that happened another session back, that's not.
I have the. I have this here.
I understand that. If you'd like to submit that as written testimony, we'd be glad to look at it. But what we're trying to do is make sure everyone that's here that wants to give testimony on Senate Bill 1550 as the text of the bill or.
Okay. What I'd like to point out is that they're not giving you the full story, and they're not. They're giving you a slanted information as their sources. I have responded in here on how it is slanted and that it's not true. And because of that, I feel that you're getting slanted information, you're not getting true information on which to base your judgments.
All right.
I am opposed to this. What it's doing is someone that has a concealed carry that has not done anything wrong is suddenly going to go into a school and shoot up a bunch of people. It's ridiculous. As far as students on campus, the ones that are doing this behavior that is poor are principally under 21. In order to be concealed carry, you have to be 21. It doesn't say, okay, all 21-year-olds that are in college, let's go get a concealed carry so we can go on college campus. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. We don't want, what we want is the illegal guns, the illegal carries, which you already have laws for, removed. We're law-abiding citizens, and you are trying to restrict current law and renege on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time. And if you want to submit that written testimony, please feel free to do so. All right, our next panel, and I apologize, I can't tell if it's Jolene Cedar Green. I apologize if I mispronounced your first name. And Jeanette Truhoon? Nope, okay. And then Bill Dewey, Mr. Dewey, and then Ted Campbell. If you'd like to get started, please.
Okay. Thank you, and that's a common difficulty. My name is Jowan Cedar Green. I'm from Forest Grove. Thank you for allowing me to speak today. Real shortly, it was only Monday afternoon as I was scanning the legislative website looking for a particular information that I stumbled across this. I was so disturbed by Senate Bill 1574 and 1550 that I was compelled to drop everything and come today. So I am not very well read on the subject, but I had to make a statement. Concerning the reciprocity, you earlier stated, Mr. Chairman, that this was not going to affect Oregonians who currently hold a CHL. I would like to offer another perspective on that. It definitely will impact Oregonians as they travel out of state, whether it be business or pleasure vacationing. Many feel that they'll be forced to apply for CHL from other states who have better reciprocity. But even worse than that, the added expense of training sessions and fees for applying out of state. there are many states who allow their residents to hold what they call a constitutional carry permit. We, given this bill, if it were to pass, would not allow residents from that state to enter our state because their state does not have substantially similar requirements to carry. So they would be forbidden to protect themselves, arm themselves when traveling to our state. And I think it would affect our tourism and business opportunities here. But mostly it would hurt Oregonians in going out of state. For the Senate Bill 1550, we heard prior comments that this is a common sense bill, which has overwhelming support by parents, faculty, and the public. And I have to disagree vehemently on both of those comments. It's anything but a common sense bill. It does not ensure public safety to outlaw citizens from being armed and protecting themselves on campus. Safety, rather, is sacrificed. This bill would, in fact, make citizens utterly helpless to protect themselves in the face of aggression. And we all know that school shootings are on the rise. Police or security personnel are not always so readily at hand. If I were in my office late at night and I heard gunshots out in the hall and screams, I would hope that someone in my office had a gun, because we know that the security personnel would probably be 20 minutes away. One last thing. Actually, I summed it up right there. It is really, most of the comments about not allowing guns to be on campus were pointed at students. And I do agree with the gentleman who spoke earlier that campus life, there is very special environment on campus. And just because of that very special nature, volatile, unstable, it is in the best interest for citizens, faculty, administrative staff, and visitors and parents to be well prepared to meet possible aggression. I have to close with one last. I cannot state name and date, although I did look all day yesterday for this case, but shortly after Virginia Tech massacre, within the month, there was another campus shooting in a northern university in 2007, where a gunman was shot and killed, a deranged gunman who was shooting at students, was shot and killed by another student who was armed and legally carrying. We aren't told how many lives he saved that day. And we know very little about these accounts because the mainstream media will not tell us. Thank you.
Thank you. Gentlemen, whoever would like to go next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bill Dewey from Tigard, Oregon. I'm here to speak against 1550. Again, I would repeat what I've heard a couple of my former speakers say, is that what is the problem that's existing that this solution is designed to address? I've heard a number of people speak about fears of people having guns on campus, and with regard to CHL holders, they already do. It's legal now, has been for decades. Again, as the gentleman said before me, what problem has occurred as a result of this that we need to address here? I've heard many law enforcement officers, including your colleague, Representative Barker, say that their experience as law enforcement officers is that CHL holders do not present a threat to anyone's safety. Whether or not they make the grounds more safe is open to interpretation. There have been examples, as you spoke of CHL holders stopping violent attacks. Self-defense is a basic human right, and I don't believe that this measure would increase safety in any way. It would remove the right of self-defense from some individuals, and I believe to lead to a less safe environment. So I would urge opposition to the language of 1550 as it currently stands, or whether it would be offered as an amendment at any future time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Campbell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman of the committee. My name is Ted Campbell. I'm retired Command Sergeant Major, U.S. Army, and I want to speak against 1550. It is not illegal to drive a car on school grounds or on a public highway, and there are more people injured and killed by cars than by guns every year. The people who cause trouble on school grounds do not have a concealed carry license. Those that have a CCL have passed an NCIC background check and are tracked to make sure if they commit a felony, they lose their concealed weapons permit. The law will not help anything. It is an attack on the rights of law-abiding citizens to defend themselves and their families. There are a lot of things at schools that can cause more problems than guns. Go to any chem lab and take a look around and go to the cleaning supply closet and see what they have there. After you look at those two places, tell me that guns are worse than what they have there. The food in some of the schools is even worse than carrying guns, and you know that. You know, we take 18-year-olds and 17-year-olds as soldiers and train them and give them weapons to go out to defend us, but when they come back to use their student loans, they can't carry a weapon on the school grounds. They say there's binge drinking and drugs. Well, let's enforce those laws on those campuses first and get rid of the drugs and the booze. Yeah. Okay? The council talked about judicating. Well, according to the ATF, even if the state wipes their slate clean, well, when they buy a concealed weapon, ask if they're ever a felon, that's a federal law, and they cannot buy a handgun if they've ever had a felony as far as the federal law is concerned. And a lot of the security guards on campuses have violated the Lautenberg law, which means they can't carry a weapon or anything else. We need to enforce those laws and get rid of the binge drinking and the drugs before we worry about this. Concealed weapons cause very little damage by people that are legally trained and handle firearms. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Joanne, one thing I wanted to clarify with the record, you made a couple of statements. It's my understanding in reviewing this and working with council, currently there are 14 to 17 states that already recognize through, call it reciprocity, but they allow Oregonians who have concealed weapons to be recognized in their states already. Current Oregon law does not recognize any other state CLEs, CHLs. That is why 1574 would actually open the door to allow for some that are outside of the state license to be able to come into the state. I just want to put that on the record since it seemed like
you
misinterpreted that.
Thank you. Gentlemen,
Mr. Chair, may I make a statement on that?
You may.
In some states, they require no training to get a CCL, and those states I would strongly suggest we don't give reciprocity to.
I agree. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. All right, our next panel is going to include Greg Miller, Terry Rush, and is it Mohan King?
Thank you, Senator Przanski, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. My name is Greg Miller. I represent the Oregon gun owners. I want to first thank you, Senator Przanski, Bill Taylor, and Joshua Nasby at Legislative Council for the effort that you put into this bill. We've been meeting on this as a group with some other stakeholders since September, attempting to put together a bill that would be palatable at least to all. In this legislature, I'm sure you all know that no bill that passes out of here is perfect. Otherwise, we wouldn't need to come back here in annual sessions to tweak things here and there. So that said, I wanted to put a few things on the record. There was a concern from the Oregon gun owners regarding the state police and their ability or their willingness to abide by the directive of this law. Section 2 directs the state police, they shall adopt rules that identify states that issue reciprocal licenses to states that issue verifiable reciprocal licenses the department shall review the rules at least once a year. So it was very clear to me in there that they were directed to do this. And the other thing I wanted to read into the record, even though the bill is not going to go anywhere, is unless the law enforcement telecommunications system was the chosen method of verifying a reciprocal license, that system was chosen because of its real-time data that it gives state police and sheriffs in the field. Some of the other databases and systems don't necessarily provide that real-time data, but the bill does say other similar data systems. So with those two things on the record, I would like to say I am very disappointed that these bills aren't moving today. I myself, as well as you folks, have put a lot of time into this. I had hoped that we could move something palatable for everybody this session, and I am equally disappointed that us as a firearms industry have not been able to get together to come to consensus on what is a good reciprocity bill for the state of Oregon. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Terry.
Thank you for allowing me to speak today. My name is Terry Ruck. I lost a beloved colleague last month because he had a gun. Hundreds of people are grieving now. 250 people came to his memorial service at the World Forestry Center last week. Guns are unforgiving and final. In a moment of despair or anger, many lives can be lost, and many people can be left bereft. Please don't make it even easier than it already is for people to carry guns, especially in our schools. Help Oregonians have safer communities and fuller lives. I urge you to support Senate Bill 1550. Thank you.
Thank you. Is it Mohan?
Thank you for the opportunity. I am Mohan King. I live in Silverton, and I was 6 years at Western training teachers and 23 years at Chemeketa. 10 years in retirement, and I'm not liking how this is going, so I come out of retirement to come back to lobby. I'll be back and talk about better protecting kids from sex abuse, but I couldn't pass this up because I'm 2 years in the Peace Corps in Nepal, and we never, ever saw one human being hit another. We came back to work on Kennedy's campaign, only to watch Martin Luther King get shot, and then Kennedy. And we regret it to this day. Coming here, we had opportunities to go to New Zealand. I think if I were at Chemeketa, and there were students allowed to have guns, I would organize, I would walk out, I refuse to teach, but I'm not there anymore. So there's other sides of this issue, and I can guarantee you how faculty at Chemeketa would have responded. And I would have been right in there helping them organize. So it's a tough issue. I appreciate that you're willing to sit and respectfully listen to the kind of discussion you have. Appreciate the time. I'll be back. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next panel is Senator. Going to include Greg.
One more thing real quick. I'd be remiss if I did not also thank Multnomah County Sheriffs, Oregon State Sheriffs Association, and the State Police for their help on this as well. So,
thank you. Let's see. Penny, I always say the last name wrong. Otomoto, I think. Otomoto. If you'll come forward, please. I believe it's Eileen Smith. Let's see. I think you've already given testimony, so we'll drop down to, how about Andy Smith and then Assistant Chief Eric Hendricks. And if you'd like to get started, that'd be great.
Surely. Thank you very much, Senator Pisanski and the committee members. I appreciate this time. You have my written testimony, so I'm going to be very brief. I'm Penny Okamoto. I'm the executive director of Ceasefire Oregon. We strongly support SB 1550 to keep guns out of schools. Because you already have my written testimony and in consideration of time, I just want to clarify at one point, someone had said that we have a problem with kids carrying guns into schools. Of course, with the Thurston High School shooting, Kip Kinkle, we're all too painfully aware of that. Also with the shootings that happened in Columbine, I want to remind people that when minors get guns, they get them because adults buy them first. So we need to address that issue separately of adults allowing access to minors to having guns. That's pretty much a separate issue, though, because minors are already not allowed to have weapons in schools. The only other story I want to relate is actually one from a personal friend of mine, who is Colin Goddard. He was shot a couple of times at the Virginia Tech shootings. I personally asked him point blank, no pun intended there, what would you do if you had a gun? Do you think having a gun would help? I want to know this. And he said no. He said what happened was I'm sitting in class, we're listening to the teacher, and all of a sudden this guy comes in, he just opens the door, and he starts shooting us. It happens instantly. There's no time to think, there's no time to respond. The next thing you know, everyone's being shot. And even if you can reach for the gun that maybe you have on your side, it's done, it's over, he's gone. That's it. And he's moved on. You don't know where else he's going. He said, am I supposed to chase him down and try to figure out who has a gun and who doesn't have a gun? It's not that easy to do. And I'll remind you also, the people, the four police officers who were shot in the Lakewood shooting a couple of years ago now, we have four armed police officers sitting at a table in a coffee shop who were ambushed. They were all armed. They all had a lot of experience. And between the four of them, they only managed to get one shot off. So the idea that people with concealed handguns are just going to come in and save the day, it's a bit unrealistic. And then if people want to have some data about our positions here, this has already been referred to, but just so it's read into the record, you can check the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators, and this is their proposal on college campuses for carrying concealed firearms, dated August 12, 2008. I thank you very much for looking into this issue and for your time to hear me. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Andy or Lieutenant, whoever wants to go first.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Andy Smith for the City of Portland. I'm here with Assistant Chief Eric Hendricks. We were opposed to Senate Bill 1574. Just wanted to take a moment to put some of our concerns on the record. I'll let the Assistant Chief speak more specifically to our concerns, but and I do appreciate that there may have been some amendments that spoke to some of our concerns that I hadn't had the benefit of seeing. But in short, we had some concerns with the vagueness of the language and that could potentially lead to the laws of other states that are not as strict as ours becoming reciprocal states. We had some questions about the verification database system. For instance, if somebody from Idaho had a license and it expired and the database registered that, then they renewed their license and traveled to Oregon and were pulled over and could potentially be arrested having a valid license, but no way to verify that. We also had some concerns about officer safety and whether out-of-state citizens would be familiar with the retreat laws in our state compared to their state. And with that, I'll turn it over to Assistant Chief Hendricks.
Andy, thank you. Chair Prozanski, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Eric Hendricks. I'm an assistant chief for the Portland Police Bureau. I've served in law enforcement here in the state of Oregon for about 28 years. I'm also a veteran of the United States Army, a gun owner, and a hunter who have owned and used firearms since I've been a teenager. I'm here representing my department in opposition to Bill 1574. And my department has a number of concerns regarding this proposed legislation. Currently, we found that there's more than 16,000 people that are licensed to carry concealed weapons in Multnomah County, and there's thousands more, as we know, that are licensed to carry around the state of Oregon. The vast majority of those folks who possess permits to carry concealed weapons are law-abiding and entirely responsible. However, every year, a number of permit holders in Multnomah County and around the state do commit crimes or other violations of Oregon laws that result in revocation of their permits. We believe the county sheriffs here in the state of Oregon do an excellent job of revoking permits when appropriate. Doing some research before I came down here today, I found that the state of Florida, by way of comparison, has issued more than 2 million concealed carry permits since 1987. So one concern of ours is this, is if we offered reciprocity to other states, is could we trust their system of accountability and believe that it's the same as thorough as offered by sheriffs here in the state of Oregon currently? Another concern is the language used in the proposed legislation. The quote, substantially similar eligibility requirements. Who would define that? And could that mean close to a requirement for a permit in this state, but perhaps not as strict. And once again, doing the research, we found, for example, the requirements to carry concealed in the state of Montana are very, very close to what's required in the state of Oregon, with the exception of age. We know here in the state of Oregon that you have to be 21 to carry, to be the holder of a carry concealed permit, but in the state of Montana, somebody 18 years of old can have that permit. So in Montana, if the requirements are identical with the exception of age, would the state police or somebody else deem that or define that as being substantially similar? Another concern for my department is what I would call the confusing patchwork of concealed carry laws around the country. In our research, we found that 16 states, I heard quoted between 16 and 18, I think, but we found that 16 states currently honor Oregon concealed carry permits. Only one of these states, the state of Nevada, shares a border with our state. Regarding the patchwork of laws, one comment I found in my research, which was telling, was this, quote, "Is it any wonder law-abiding citizens are confused? Our state system offers certainty, and for a law enforcement officer on the street, be it in Portland or Pendleton, that certainty is comforting. An additional concern we have is the cost of monitoring the continuing changes in concealed carry laws around the country. I found 24 changes in those laws from January 2011 to present. In these economic times, we do not believe we need to add what is an admittedly complicated and confusing task to our already overworked and overburdened police officers. My last comment involves an incident that occurred in Portland during the Occupy protests in downtown Portland last fall. A young man from Washington became engaged in a heated argument with some protesters as he passed by on the sidewalk. He ended up displaying a holstered handgun to the protesters. Our officers were close by. They promptly responded and arrested the young man for disorderly conduct. The officers later find out that the man had a concealed carry permit from the state of Washington. And my point is this is the laws regarding the display and use of firearms and when one can use deadly force differ in some ways widely from state to state. What assurances will we have that permit holders from other states would know Oregon laws? And we also believe our current laws concerning concealed carry work very well for Oregon. We feel the proposed changes offers too much uncertainty in a system now which offers certainty to both law enforcement and the citizens here in our state. Thanks very much for the opportunity to come down and testify today.
All right, thank you. So what I'm going to do is, Assistant Chief Hendricks, you should get a copy of the dash twos and the dash sixes for this bill, because the bill that you were giving testimony on was how it was originally drafted. We heard a lot of those concerns, and that's why we put much more specific language as to the actual requirements required in Oregon would be actually in the statute to actually make clear and succinct what would be required to be eligible. And also, I think, as you all know, ignorance is no defense to a law. If someone comes in from another state and says, well, we could do this wherever they're from, that's not a defense. But we did have the dash twos that would, in fact, allow a citizen who was actually in compliance, Andy, to say there was some type of updating of their license, and for whatever reason they didn't go on to the a universal data system that could be verified, they would still have the affirmative defense to defend against that. So thank you very much for coming forward. I have one other panel that has signed up to give testimony today, and that's Elise Gutierrez, Dave Ainsbury, and Kevin Finney.
Chairman Przanski, Dave Ainsbury, if the bill is not going to move, most of what I would testify about would be technical amendments. I'd like to defer.
It's not moving. Thank you for your time.
Good afternoon. My name is Elise Gauthier. I'm with Ceasefire Oregon. We oppose 1574. And I want to underscore one of the several excellent points Assistant Chief Hendricks made, and that is, even with this bill, which has definitely dealt with a lot of the objections that we have had over the years. But even with this bill, you are relying on other states' processes to get it right before they give someone a concealed handgun. The handout that I'm handing out right now is from the Violence Policy Center. It lists all the investigations that have been done into the procedures with which other states have given CHLs, and all the criminals, felons, people who have committed heinous crimes have been given concealed handgun licenses by these states. And the problem is they're just, we don't want to rely on other states to decide who's going to carry loaded handguns in our state. Because a lot of people who are criminals are given handguns, and then, as Assistant Chief Hendricks also said, many people also commit crimes after they have their CHLs. And for data on that, you can also go to the Violence Policy Center, where they just collect people, CHL holders who have committed, who have killed people. Three of those are people with Oregon CHLs. You can get all the details on their site. And just very quickly, for another CHL holder who could have caused real problems, I assume you saw in the paper recently this CHL holder at Mount Tabor Park who didn't like the fact that he didn't get to park where he wanted to park, so he went back to his car, got his loaded 9mm, and came out and brandished it, and then grabbed his kid off of the very busy merry-go-round, and was subsequently convicted of several crimes, as I'm sure you will agree he should have been. So even with this bill, the question before you is, should the state of Oregon invite more people to carry loaded handguns in our state? We believe that the great majority of Oregonians would say no, because allowing more guns on our streets will make us all less safe. The United States Supreme Court has held that the Second Amendment does provide a right to keep a gun in the home for self-defense. The court has not held that there is a right to carry a loaded handgun in public. This legislature could, if it wanted to, significantly restrict the carrying of loaded handguns in public without running afoul of the Second Amendment. And that's because limiting the number of handguns is substantially related to protecting the public health. The government has an important interest in reducing the number of concealed weapons in public in order to reduce the risks that other members of the public who use the streets are faced with when people have loaded handguns next to them. Now, the gun lobby and its followers assert that they should be able to carry loaded handguns everywhere at all times. We disagree. Their guns pose a very real risk that the people around them will be caught in the crossfire or inadvertently shot. We would urge you not to invite other people from other states to carry loaded handguns on our streets. And for that reason, we would have to oppose this reciprocity bill. Thank you.
Kevin.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Finney. I'm the Public Policy Director for Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. Ecumenical Ministries is an association of Christian denominations, individual congregations, direct service providers, ecumenical associations, and interfaith partners. Our members feel very strongly that any time an act of firearms violence results in the taking of a human life or an individual being seriously wounded, that this is a human tragedy and an offense against God. We urge members of this committee not to expand the presence of firearms in public places. We support Senate Bill 1550 and oppose Senate Bill 1574. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
All right, thank you. Questions? I guess one thing I wanted to follow up on, and that's for Lise. You've given us this testimony or written stuff from the Violence Policy Center. I noticed that one of the things they speak about is regarding Texas concealed carry law. I'm wondering if you've had an opportunity to review the actual data that comes from the Regulatory Services Division of the Texas Department of Public Safety that actually goes through each of the different crimes and actually notes how many total convictions,
how many of those convictions were CHL holders, and giving a percentage.
I have relied on the reports of the study. I have not seen the data themselves.
You may want to look at that, because when I look at this, it shows that almost every crime that they report, that it is less, and I say less than 1%, 0%, except for the areas where you're saying unlawfully carrying a handgun license holder. And the other one that I saw that stuck out was a concealed weapon holder carrying it onto premises that have alcohol, which in the state of Texas, you cannot have a loaded handgun or other type of guns in a licensed premises. But I would ask you to look at this, because it appears that this is a little bit on the other side. I had one other question regarding the statement you made. You said that
if I could just respond, there are several summaries here, not just in Texas.
Okay. I have something that I can actually draw against and look at it. And when I look at it just on the surface, it appears that what they have put may be limiting to just a violation of carrying a gun where they're okay. not supposed to, as compared to a crime against an individual.
I will take a look at that.
And I think the other part that I wanted clarification, I think I heard you say that there have been three people that had CHLs that had killed other people. I maybe misunderstood that.
The Violence Policies Center has a page of information they've been able to collect from the newspaper about people who had concealed handgun licenses, which then proceeded to kill someone. Yes.
Did that story or did that study show whether or not there was justified homicide?
They have a summary of each killing. Okay. They do not include justified self-defense. They don't include justified homicide.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. That's all I had that was scheduled. Is there anyone else who did not get on the list that wanted to give testimony? If not, yes, sir. Please come forward. I'll need you to please state your name for the record.
Yes, sir. Senator Prozanski and the rest of the committee. My name's Dave Wagner. I've heard a lot of supposition here about what could happen, might happen. I'm a CHL permit holder, state of Oregon. Also hold one for state of Utah, which is reciprocal with 31 other states at last count. I count myself among the most peaceful and law-abiding citizens in the state of Oregon. I see that 1550 appears to me to be a solution looking for a problem. I have heard no sites as far as actual circumstances where this bill would have solved a problem, saved anybody's life. I've heard a lot of supposition about school students who binge drink and take drugs in one thing or another. Most of those do not have a concealed handgun license. I went to substantial expense and time to get my license so that I would be in compliance with Oregon state law. I feel that it is my responsibility to ensure my own safety, and that I cannot rely on public safety officials to necessarily respond to a threatening situation. That's what I've got. As far as the 1574, I applaud the effort and the intent there. I think that we could probably be a little more simple if we let the states negotiate with each other as far as what their requirements are for reciprocity. Like I say, I have a Utah permit. It's reciprocal in 31 other states. I got that because the Oregon permit was not reciprocal, and I would like to see that improved by whatever method.
Thank you. All right, thank you. And I appreciate everyone coming down. As I said at the beginning of this, these two bills, 1550 as well as 1574, will not be moving forward. So even though they are currently scheduled for work sessions or possible work sessions for this coming Monday, the 13th, they will be removed from there. The committee, I believe, has completed the work that we have before us as Senate bills.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's correct. We have nothing scheduled for Friday, and now we have nothing scheduled for Monday.
So at this point, we will not be meeting as a committee this coming Friday. We are at the call of the chair once we start getting some House bills coming over that are assigned to us. And again, I apologize for not being able to get notice to those who came forward. That's why I wanted to make sure we took your testimony. As I mentioned at the time, at the beginning, because of action that occurred in the House and information getting back to me not until 11:25. I felt it was only appropriate for us to have the hearing today to allow those who did travel here to have the opportunity to say what they wanted to say, with the understanding those two bills will not be moving forward. And in fact, no gun legislation will be moving through the judiciary committees at this time. Anything else?
It appears to me, Mr. Chair, that having the Senate President on this committee limits the number of bills we get.
And with that, we're adjourned. And yes, so sorry, Senator Wissett.
Ask Mr. Taylor. Obviously, in the you're going to have a lot of spare time now. I was wondering if you could go through this.
Can I have everyone's attention, please? We're still in session.
This Dash 2 amendment that's been hand inscribed, I wonder if you could highlight the parts of it that we're still in. It's really difficult for me to understand what is going on with this. I understand the bill is dead, but this bill's never dead, so it'll be back.
I think what he was attempting to do was show what the Dash 2s with the affirmative defense, how that would play in, and also the Dash 6 that would substantially change some of the flexibility that we were hearing complaints about. But we'll get counsel when he has that spare moment.
Unfortunately, I still have a lot of bills in the House, including one at 5 o'clock tonight.
So,
but yes, we can accommodate
we'll get
you.
I appreciate that because we'd like to know what it was that you wanted to bring forward that didn't happen.
All right. Well, you should have the Dash 2s and the Dash 6s, and your assistant needs some help. We'll be glad to help them. All right. With that, I want to thank. I'd like to thank the committee and for those who attended today. We're adjourned until the call of the chair. Please keep vigilance on the posting of the agendas for House bills.